Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:02 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 31st. It being the last day of the month, we've had a little bit of ebb and flow in terms of the performance in the stock market. There's obviously some people taking some profits on the last day of the month. So what happens tomorrow is probably going to be a better indication of how people are reacting to the Federal Reserve's statement yesterday that they are done for the moment with cutting interest rates. The Dow Jones, for example, is still trading around this 27,000 level. The S&P 500 is still in the region of its all-time peak. The NASDAQ is at a very similar condition. Certainly, there's nothing in the way of downward dynamics to really unseat the enthusiasm of some investors, particularly when we look at the performance of companies like Apple or Facebook. Apple, for example, was up in early trading, it was down in the middle of the day, reversed the decline to finish on the peak of the day, or very close to it. That is a pretty volatile performance intraday, but nonetheless, it is continuing to hold this breakout to new highs. Now, I think anyone with eyes can see that there is really a rather wide overextension relative to the trend mean right now, and the share has been particularly volatile over the 12-month period. Nonetheless, it is continuing to push on the upside. Facebook has been through the ringer over the course of the last 12 months. It wasn't quite able to hold on to all of its advance in here today, but it is still in positive territory. $200 has been an area of resistance now for well over a year. Part of the reason why it pulled back was its self-imposed flagellation in terms of trying to look like it was willing to regulate itself in anticipation of what could have been much harsher regulation had Congress acted. There may still be a movement towards antitrust or greater regulation of the social media sector, but perhaps not right away. Amazon is still trading below the trend mean. It has bounced pretty admirably so far since last Friday. It really does, though, need to hold the $1,700 area. Certainly, when we look at what's going on in terms of the transportation sector, well, it could have broken upwards yesterday. It wasn't quite able to do that. It was certainly being led lower by freight haulers. There is less demand. That's something that we can see from Amazon. It's something we can see in the transportation sector. When, for example, we look at Etsy, this is their third quarter where they have had declining sales, and that is a rather significant breakdown. This is, I would say, one of the most textbook examples of a type 2 top with right hand extension. When we get the loss of momentum, the inability to hold breakouts, the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and that was all the way back in July. We had a period of ranging which never successfully got back above the trend mean. In fact, we had a key reversal at the end of September from the region of the trend mean, and now we've had this really very large downward dynamic on the back of poor earnings. Well, this looks like a completed top formation. And when we marry that with the performance of Amazon, then look, for example, at eBay, which has not been able to sustain its highs. One thing that I thought was particularly interesting was the CEO of Shopify was saying that he and his company are trying to empower Amazon rebels. But of course, you can have an e-commerce site, but unless you market it, it might as well be out in the wilderness. It is companies like Google and Facebook and Snapchat and Twitter are those that help to drive sales to privately owned websites. Snapchat has rallied really quite admirably since the beginning of this year. It is now bouncing from the region of the trend mean. Twitter, on the other hand, has said that they're not going to take political ads any longer, and that nixed the share over the course of the last couple of weeks. So it is all to play for in terms of the ability of companies to benefit from the current environment. But the rolling over that we're seeing in the e-commerce sector, and the fact that what we've already seen has been a thinning in the performance of retail companies. Part of the reason for that is because of these e-commerce companies taking away the market share from the more established brands. What is also worth highlighting is that some of the discounters like TJX have been among the best performing shares anywhere over the course of the last decade, but also exhibit some loss of momentum over the last couple of weeks, and at least the potential for some unwinding of the overbought condition. I think that when we look at what is leading the market higher, well, there's a clear tendency to look at the technology sector, and Microsoft pushing on to a new all-time high this week is certainly noteworthy. Then, of course, we have the kinds of companies that are benefiting from reliance of people on digital currency, but also then the reliability of those kinds of cash flows that are very clearly related to a subscription model. Well, Visa and MasterCard exemplify that, and they continue to represent some of the best performing shares as well. Then when we look at, for example, the kinds of companies that would not have been considered growth companies and yet continue to race higher, Procter & Gamble very much stands out. It had a storming move over the course of the last couple of weeks, bouncing higher on stronger earnings. I rather do think, though, that part of the reason why it's been doing well has been because of the compression in bond yields. Now, when we look at what's going on in terms of 10-year treasuries, we've had some rather large upward dynamics in terms of the yield, but the yield is compressing now over the last 2 days. It hasn't quite been able to break the sequence of lower rally highs. We do have a higher reaction low. 1.5% is an awfully big psychological level. It's going to have to hold if the supply dominant environment is to be given the benefit of the doubt. Now, when we think about one of the more important charts out there, it's the dollar. The dollar has been really quite firm over the course of the last couple of years. The defining characteristic of the dollar index's advance has been its ability to bounce from the region of the trend mean despite the relatively modest pace of the advance. It's now right back in the region of the trend mean. If it's going to bounce, this is it. This is exactly where that needs to happen. If it fails here, well, then we're talking about it breaking its uptrend. One of the clearest fundamentals in favor of the dollar has been the fact that the Federal Reserve was reducing the size of its balance sheet and raising interest rates. Well, right now it's doing neither. It's already pumped in $200 billion worth of liquidity into its balance sheet, and it's cut interest rates 3 times already. Well, that's removing a tailwind from the dollar. Then, of course, there is the potential that other countries are perhaps starting to recover. And then you have the relative, I guess, when you then think about why is it that people were willing to bid up the price of bonds, continue to support the stock market and accumulate dollars. It was because they were worried about everywhere else. And international investors are very much attuned to having capital market, currency market, and yield on their side. They've had that on their side in the USA over the course of the last few years. That's been another important tailwind for the dollar. Well, the yield differential is contracting, and the quantity of dollars in circulation is increasing. Those are removing some of the support, but it's also making that international investor argument less compelling. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the yen, well, it had been weakening over the course of the last couple of months, but this was a rather large downward dynamic by the dollar in here today, and it's from right in the region of the trend mean. So there may be some upward pressure coming through on the Nikkei, or excuse me, on the yen, that could have a deleterious effect on the Nikkei, since it does tend to benefit most when the yen is weakening, and there is a short-term overbought condition in here right now. The pound is also strengthening in here, and it is coming back up towards the 130 area. This looks like a pretty orderly consolidation above the trend mean. It is certainly looking more likely that we're going to see a stronger pound over the near term than a weaker pound. When we then think about the euro, it's been trending down in a pretty consistent manner. The region of the trend mean has been an acute area of resistance for nearly 2 full years, so it's going to have to sustain a move above that level. It's almost identical in terms of the downtrend we've seen for the Australian dollar, and that's coming back up towards the 70-cent level. So there is evidence now of the dollar starting to lose consistency against some of the weaker developed market currencies, but it is still strengthening against some of the weaker emerging market currencies. And the rand, for example, is pulling back from the region of the trend mean in here. And this looks like a dollar bullish chart. When we look at the Chilean peso, it continues to push on to new lows. And this is the lowest level we've seen in years. What I find particularly interesting is that despite the tone of the protests, copper prices were weaker in a reasonably dynamic manner in here, pulling back from the region of the trend mean. Lead prices have been pretty firm over the last few weeks, but were down in a pretty dynamic manner over the course of the last 2 days. When we think then about nickel, which has been the clear outperformer, then it really does need to hold that $15 area if the breakout from the 3-year base is going to be sustained. What this is also questioning is how well is the continuous commodity index going to be able to hold this 400-point level. So far, it's been pretty quiet around here, and there hasn't been a clear evidence of just big dynamic moves to break the trend, but at least it is holding the 400-point level. As long as it's doing that, then I think we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the breakout, but there is a pretty small margin for error here. That does raise the potential that what we're looking at is an environment which we haven't seen or it doesn't have a great deal of parallel. Gold prices continue to push higher, and China's talking about introducing its own state-backed cryptocurrency. Now, is that going to be a parallel currency? Is it going to be a way that they're going to try and take over the international payments sector? What is the exact ambition of that kind of move is open to question, but what we do know is that when a country decides to create a parallel currency, it's not usually from a position of strength. The weakness we're seeing in the industrial metals complex is rather odd against a background where we're getting some signs of a weakening dollar that suggests that it's more to do with what's going on in China. And certainly, there is a clear ambition by people in China to get their money out of the country. I've definitely seen that firsthand in meetings I've attended over the course of the last few weeks. So when we think about what's going on in terms of stock market activity, monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time. Wall Street is still right in the region of its peak. Europe looks increasingly likely that it is going to be able to push up and through this 400 level. We are getting some thinning in terms of the stock market performance, despite the fact that the equal weighted index is still pushing higher. There is certainly a delineation between some very clear winners and losers within this market. When we think about where are we in terms of the longer term cycle, there are still a lot of people that are very worried about a recession because we've had the inverted yield curve. Then, of course, the question is, where does the recession occur? I think that there is obviously a very clear reliance in the USA upon the health of the consumer. The fact that the e-commerce companies are not doing as well is an indication that the consumer may be tiring. That's obviously something that needs to be paid attention to. When we then think about new hires, new hiring has been weaker. Generally, companies decide to stop hiring people before they start firing people, so that is a measure that we do need to pay attention to. But when then we think about some of the other important markets that do tend to lead, well, the high yield bond spread continues to contract. One thing that I think is rather interesting is the TED spread, which I don't look at all that often. There hasn't been a need to look at the TED spread for a long time. It was surging higher back in 2008. That was when people were really worried about the TED spread. It was being written about almost ad nauseum. And it was a clear reflection that there were liquidity issues that were emerging in the banking sector. Well, we're at much reduced levels in here today, and that's largely a function of the fact that we have got much lower interest rates. But when we just look at the trend, then the TED spread is expanding. And that is suggestive of tightness in the banking sector, that this issue with repos and the distorting effect of not only quantitative easing but also the imposition of regulations that don't allow banks to fulfill what would have once been considered a normal activity, then that does represent a challenge. These are the kinds of measures that do need to be monitored. And if we were to see these measures starting to move upwards on a more sustained basis, then that is something that we should be really, I think, very aware of. There is also the additional point that markets don't generally run into trouble until the yield curve is cruising through 50 basis points. Now, we're a long way from that. It's at 16 right now. So, and generally speaking, it takes a while before we start to see that following an inversion. It's usually, in fact, that the inverted yield curve becomes a lead indicator for a recession just before, perhaps the best way to think about it is after everyone's already forgotten about the inversion. What we often see from stock markets after the inversion is that they rally, because we then start to see that there hasn't been a lot of evidence yet of a slowing economy, and yet we are getting easier monetary policy. We're also entering the most favorable time of the year for stock markets. So I think that it is quite likely we're going to see additional upside before we get evidence of a clearly slowing economy. In other words, we get the bubble before the recession, not after it. I think that is, I think, the most important thing to bear in mind. If we had to worry about one particular sector, I think what's going on in China, the increasingly desperate measures that they're willing to go to insulate or try to hide the performance of the domestic economy, this talk of creating a parallel currency, whether it is crypto or otherwise, is just, at least to me, smell of desperation. And the fact that gold remains really quite firm, I think that speaks volumes. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.